Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up later this hour, we will play highlights from the Jon Stewart Stephen Colbert rally in D.C. on Saturday, and we'll take calls from any of you who were there. Was it what you hoped it would be, and did it restore your sanity and or fear? We will play those clips and take those calls in a little while. First, more election preview. Remember, we have all kinds of information on our politics website. It's freecountry.org, including our updated voter's guide for tomorrow's election. And if you live in New York City, you will find two yes or no questions on the backs of your ballots tomorrow. One is about restoring term limits to two terms. The other combines seven different changes to the city charter, ranging from more campaign spending disclosure requirements to maps of bus depots and other polluting facilities. Alex Camarda is public policy director for the Good Government Group, the Citizens Union. He is here to explain the ballot questions to help you decide. Hi, Alex. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on.
And listeners, now's your chance if you want to know anything about the ballot questions in New York City tomorrow, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And by way of full disclosure, Alex, we should mention that Citizens Union does endorse candidates, does recommend yes or no votes on things like this, and Citizens Union is recommending that the term limits question be rejected and the one involving these seven other things be accepted with a yes vote. But you are here to fill us in on the details and the pros and cons, the arguments on each side, because you're very much in the weeds with these issues. You know these details, and you're not here to try to argue for your point of view.
That's right. Citizens Union played an important role in this process in that we were a resource to the commission. And so we put out a report in the end of June with many recommendations on a variety of issues, some of which are covered in these questions.
And let's start with term limits. Question one, this restores the limit of two consecutive four-year terms for elected city officials, mayor, public advocate, comptroller, and city council members. That, of course, council changed on their own last year, and the mayor signed, to let Mayor Bloomberg and many of the council members run for a third term. How does this restore the old law, and how completely? Because it's not complete, right?
Right. It goes – currently, the city elected officials can serve up to three consecutive four-year terms. So if this referendum is approved, they will go back to two, a limit of two consecutive four-year terms. And so it's a return to the way things were prior to the change in 2008. That was very controversial. And the thinking of the commission in putting this on the ballot is that the voters did not get an opportunity to weigh in 2008. They weighed in 1993 and 1996, both times supporting two terms. And so the thinking here is that they should have the opportunity to weigh in and decide if the city should return to that.
And this, of course, was such a source of anger among many New Yorkers last year, the fact that term limits were enacted by a voter referendum in the first place, but then the political sector went around that to exempt themselves for last year, and now they're putting it back. And I guess people who are currently in office kind of get grandfathered in here. So there could still be people, let's say, who were elected for the first time last year in the city elections who will have the opportunity to serve three terms, because I guess the commission decided that they ran for office under that presumption, under the current law, so they get to serve three terms if they're elected three times.
Right. I mean,
after that, it goes away.
That's the irony here, is that many voters will actually go to the polls thinking that in some way they're probably holding accountable those who made the change without consulting the voters. Yet every sitting elected official can serve up to three terms. And so we won't see full implementation of this until 2021.
One option not offered here is to abolish term limits. That's, restricting a major choice. Why isn't that there?
I think the commission felt that they didn't want to make the questions too complex. That was certainly debated at some of the hearings that they held. but I think they finally came down on just providing a yes, no for clarity's sake, and the fact that the voters weighed in on this twice before. But I should note that with regard to there's a provision, the third part of this, that prohibits changes in the by the sitting council for their own term limits, so that if they were to change them in the future, it would only affect future members. But a lot of people believe that...
Because that was another thing that so angered people last year, that people changed, Mayor Bloomberg and the current council at the time, changed term limits to allow exemptions for themselves.
Right, because of the conflict of interest, the inherent act of self-interest. So the commission tries to prevent that, but many legal scholars believe that this is easily undone in that the council simply has to change the charter, removing this prohibition, and then could change term limits back. So it's not as restrictive as it's presented.
I asked the president of the Board of Elections on the air last hour if people who don't like term limits have the option of writing that in on the back of the ballot where these questions appear. And she actually said yes.
The issue there would be there's so little room. I mean, this is something where not only are the ballot questions on the back of the ballot, but they're actually with the directions. So they're right in the bottom right-hand corner. And the text is so dense, it's so concentrated that many voters might miss this entirely.
Haven't term limits largely been a Republican tactic against Democrats in power? It was in the Contract with America in 1994 for Congress when Newt Gingrich and company wanted to end 40 years of Democratic control of the House. Then, by the way, when they took control of the House in that election, term limits never got enacted. But it was funded and promoted in New York City by conservative businessman Ron Lauder against what he saw as the Democratic permanent government here. You think that's a fair historical context?
I think that's part of it, but I also think that it's an effort to oust incumbents because, I mean, what we see more often than, you know, just Republicans or Democrats gaining from this is that incumbents almost always are elected. We see this at the state level. It's true in the council. I mean, the power of incumbency is very strong. And so what term limits do is they ultimately ensure that you're going to get new blood, new energy into whatever body it is, in this case, the council, eventually. And I think that's the benefit of term limits and those who support it.
And I guess if we want to have a conversation of term limits, good or bad, that should really be for another time, because all that's on the ballot tomorrow in New York City is two terms or three terms for term limits. So let's go to question two. It is seven different questions, and I actually want to run down all seven of them briefly to inform our listeners and get your thumbnail description of what they are, and we'll do a little bit of pros and cons. Unfortunately, as we discussed earlier in the show, these are all bundled together into one question so that people will have to choose a yes or no vote on the entire package.
Right. And that's something that has been controversial. I know Council Member Brewer is recommending a no vote on this simply for that reason, and other council members were also upset by the bundling. The good government groups would have preferred that voters had a chance to weigh in on each of these seven.
In fact, I asked the chairman of the Charter Revision Commission, Matthew Goldstein, on this show, once they came back with the final versions, why they bundled seven pretty unrelated things together on the ballot. And he said one reason had to do with a bit of charter history. The other reason has to do with the ballot design, that they were literally not given enough room by the state to separate these questions. Listen to the part of that answer.
A structural problem that we are facing that, quite frankly, I'm somewhat concerned about. We have a new voting system that will be put in place when our recommendations from the charter will be voted upon. And if you look at the actual ballot, which is going to be scanned electronically, the ballot has to be flipped to the back side to see where the items are for the charter recommendations. And there is a very small amount of space to place these questions. If we had to disaggregate the questions, we would not have enough room on the particular ballot.
So are you concerned about that too at Citizens Union?
We are, but you know, it's interesting because a week prior to the primary, the former executive director of the Board of Elections testified at a council hearing that, in fact, they could have done multiple pages. So it seems that there's a misunderstanding or a he said, she said scenario here where it appears that the questions could have been spread out over many pages and perhaps offer the voters more choice.
Okay. So here are the seven questions that are all bundled together. For question two, disclosure of independent campaign spending. It would require public disclosure of expenditures made by entities and individuals independent from candidates to influence the outcome of a city election or a referendum. That's actually a big thing right now. After the Citizens United decision, all this campaign money going into places all over the country by independent groups without disclosure. So that's number one, disclosure of independent campaign spending. Then two, ballot access. Generally reduce the number of petition signatures needed by candidates for a city elective office to appear on a ballot. Remember, these all pertain only to New York City, and it won't affect Citizens United and, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
And any other place or getting ballot access around the rest of the state. So that's two. Voter assistance and the campaign finance board. It would merge voter assistance functions, including a reconstituted voter assistance advisory committee, into the campaign finance board. That sounds like it's just bureaucratic.
Well, the latter with that, the voter assistance commission was created in the by the Charter Commission in 1987-88. And what it was charged with doing was increasing voter registration and increasing voting. Since then, actually, voting's declined due to a lot of reasons beyond just the Voter Assistance Commission's work. But the thinking here is that, and I would say it goes beyond being bureaucratic, in that in putting it back into the campaign finance board, it takes a very small entity that has a $200,000 budget with one staff member and puts it in this larger entity that has a greater presence. And hopefully some economies of scale can be realized. It kind of amplifies their presence. And that will enable them to more effectively carry out their mission.
All right. Item four, conflict of interest law. It would require all public servants to receive conflict of interest training, raise the maximum fine for a public servant who violates the city's conflict of interest law, and allow the city to recover any benefits obtained from such violations. Straightforward.
So there, right. And there's some deterrent effects here as well as the training is a big piece of it. I think that hasn't been talked about a lot. The Conflicts of Interest Board only has one staff member that does trainings for all city employees. And so requiring that the agencies themselves do the training in coordination with the Conflicts of Interest Board ought to have a large preventative effect.
All right. Number five, and this one's going to make the eyes roll for how gray and bureaucratic it sounds, and you tell me if it's more important than this. This is called City Administrative Tribunals. And it would authorize the mayor to direct the merger of administrative tribunals and adjudications in the Office of Administrative Trials and Hearings and permit the Department of Consumer Affairs to adjudicate all violations issued by that department.
This is actually a measure to try and, you know, centralize these tribunals, which are dispersed across different agencies, for the violations that they issue under one roof. It would probably be oath, although it's the actual language allows any centralized authority to be created by the mayor. And the thinking, again, is that there would be economies of scale, some efficiencies realized, in addition to standardization for the process. And it also removes the perception that perhaps these are not impartial hearings because they're conducted by the very same entity that issues the violations.
Number six out of seven, city reporting requirements and advisory bodies. It would create a commission to review requirements for reports and advisory bodies and waive the requirements subject to city council review where the commission finds they are not of continuing value. And again, I look at this one and I think, why should we care?
This is an effort to streamline government. I mean, there are a lot of reports that council members over the years have passed as part of laws to ensure that agencies do the job that they're charged with, and to get feedback on particular bills that they pass is to see that they're actually happening. And so there's something like 175 different reports that are required to be completed in the Charter and Administrative Code, many of which are not done. And then there's a whole slew of advisory bodies as well. So this seeks to kind of clean up the charter and the administrative code so that those are unnecessary, don't need to be, time doesn't need to be devoted to their completion any longer.
And they need to do that by voter referendum, huh?
Yes, apparently. I mean, you know, I think the council is always reluctant to get rid of reports that they've created, although they do have a say here in that ultimately the ruling of the committee that's going to look at these advisory bodies and reports, it goes back to the council for approval of that since it is a legislative function.
And the final item, which gets back to something that I think a lot of people can relate to, whether they're for it or against it, is a map for facility siting. And I think this is inspired by public health concerns in low-income neighborhoods. It would include in the city's facilities siting map those transportation and waste management facilities operated by or for government entities or by private entities that provide comparable services. So I'm guessing this has to do with bus depots.
That's right.
And waste transfer stations and things like that, which we've heard forever and ever, are concentrated disproportionately in minority neighborhoods.
Right. And this map in the past has not presented the full scope of all these facilities. It's only put the city, primarily the city-owned or facilities on the map. So this would expand that to include privately run facilities, state and federal facilities, so it creates a more comprehensive picture. It would also make changes to the text that accompanies this map, again, providing a more complete picture of these facilities. So the thinking is that when the decisions are made, they'll actually consult these and have a better picture of what's going on in particular neighborhoods. That being said, this information is already available elsewhere. The Department of City Planning claims that they have referred to that full scope of information and making decisions in the past. So it's a transparency piece that helps the public really to have a sense of what facilities exist in particular neighborhoods.
So there you go. That's seven different items all bundled into one yes or no question on tomorrow's ballot. If you live in New York City, it's question two, called Elections and Government Administration. Right. And it's all of those seven things. Can I come back to the first one for just a minute?
Sure.
And get your comment on it? Because there is so much attention now around the country to all this anonymous money going into these independent groups that are spending like crazy on for or against candidates. Disclosure of independent campaign spending. It would require public disclosure of expenditures made by entities and individuals independent from candidates to influence the outcome of a city election or referendum. So if there were groups like this Karl Rove Crossroads for America, which is getting so much attention as being one of the main engines of this, hidden, non-disclosed spending, anybody who contributes to something like that, if the money is spent on a campaign for New York City elected office, would then have to disclose?
So disclosure is actually already occurs in New York State, because those who make these kind of independent expenditures are required to report as political committees to the state. So what this does is make it more robust. It connects the expenditures with the entity, making them more closely. So, for instance, if an entity spends more than $1,000 not coordinated with a campaign, they would have to disclose that spending in a municipal race. If they spend more than $5,000, they would actually have to disclose not only the spending itself, but the sources of that spending dating back 12 months. And then for any advertisement that's more than $1,000 in spending, or I should say if the entity spent more than $1,000 and they run advertisements, they actually have to disclose in the ad who's making that spending as well.
All right. Let's take a few phone calls. People do have questions. We'll do this for a few more minutes with Alex Camarda, Public Policy Director for the Good Government Group, the Citizens Union, as we talk about the two ballot questions in New York City tomorrow. And Joseph in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Regarding question one, the referendum on term limits, is there a feature of this law that would differ from the previous one, which would preclude the city council from overruling the public will?
Yes, there is the third point in the question prohibits the council from changing term limits for themselves, essentially for sitting members. However, as I referenced earlier, it doesn't prevent the council from simply changing the charter to remove that prohibition and then changing term limits. But it creates a two-step process. It's a greater political barrier to changing term limits than has existed previously.
Joseph, thank you. Raul in Prospect Heights, you have a concern about one of those seven items in question two?
Yeah, well, it's kind of representative of what I think of the whole process is this. The questions strengthen the Conflict of Interest Board, but the Conflict of Interest Board is still appointed by the mayor. My problem is that we have a mayor that's too strong and that a lot of these reforms don't seem to address that problem.
So it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That's the concerns that I've heard in doing forums and communities regarding question two. There are a number of proposals here. The advisory body related to reports, or I should say the commission that's created to remove reports and advisory bodies, the consolidation of the tribunals. Some people see that as enhancing the mayor's power and believe that we already have a mayor that's too powerful.
Let's see. Alex in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm absolutely opposed to term limits. I think that, to begin with, it's probably a remnant of anti-colonialism. That's my personal view. But term limits essentially take away my privileges just because there are some systemic problems. And I think that first, fix the problems, do it in different ways. Do it by reallocating advertising funds from the incumbent to something else. It can be done perhaps by changing the length of terms instead of having these always cliffhanger 2 or 4 year terms as in general, especially in Congress. Have them go to 6 years, maybe. And
Alex, unfortunately, your point of view does not have a voice on this ballot tomorrow because it's only a choice between two term limits and three term limits. and so the only thing left for someone like you to do is to try to write in the alternative just to have that, you know, that tiny peep heard.
And others are opposed to term limits because they feel like, again, coming back to this theme, this overriding theme, that the mayor is too powerful. And they believe that limiting the council to two terms from three will enhance the powers of the mayor even more because of the time it takes to learn the budget process, learn the issue areas for the committees on which council members serve.
Now, on this question of anonymous donations to organizations that do campaign spending, here is an anonymous caller in Manhattan. You're on WNYC.
Yes. Hi, Brian.
Yes.
Yeah, this I'm calling about the word disclosure.
Yes.
For me, anyone who is using that word is for unlimited campaign funds. They're not, in other words, they're not against having the government fund the, like in England, the government funding elections. So it's a code word for unlimited fund.
Sorry, let me just break through the double negatives there. If you, in your opinion, if you are for disclosure of your campaign spending, then you're trying to discourage private campaign spending and move to a government-funded system? Is that what you're saying?
No, the people who are using the word, we're in favor of disclosing, they're not in favor of eliminating unlimited campaign money.
I tend to think it's just the opposite, that the people who don't want to disclose that they're doing it don't want to be embarrassed by it, don't want the disclosure traced to them because voters will have a certain opinion of it. And so they want unlimited, undisclosed.
And here in New York City, if this question number two passes, we will have both. We'll have a publicly funded system, a matching system for council races and other city races. And then we'll also have the disclosure of independent expenditures.
Just tell me before you go, what do you recommend to people who on question two like some and don't like others of these changes? Are there big sweep, you know, campaigns? Obviously, there aren't big campaigns for and against question two, I don't believe. But are there kind of broad stroke arguments to vote for this whole set or against this whole set because one or another is really important?
Sure. I think people ought to think about each of the individual questions, which are most important to them, weigh those against the ones that they prefer versus the ones that they don't, and make a decision in that way. I think another way to look at it is what I mentioned before. If you're very concerned about the centralization of mayoral power, you may want to vote no on this question. If you find that the efforts to streamline government and some of the efforts to make races more competitive through reducing ballot signatures are most important to you, then you should vote yes.
And we thank Alex Camarda, Public Policy Director for the Good Government Group, the Citizens Union. Thank you for explaining these ballot questions. I think, especially on question two, people now know a lot more than they did a few minutes ago. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For contributing to democracy in that way. And listeners, don't forget, with Election Day tomorrow, we have a lot going on our politics website. It's afreecountry.org. We have a sample state ballot annotated to help you understand how to navigate the design flaws, which we'll talk about more in just a minute with a designer. We have a colorful new infographic called 6 Degrees of Cuomo and Paladino about the people in each candidate's inner and outer orbits who would likely become more influential depending on who's elected. We have a voter's guide offering you the candidates' positions on key issues in all the contested races in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And if you've really been paying attention, we have an election results prediction contest. Win yourself a guest appearance right here on The Brian Lehrer Show if you can predict tomorrow's outcomes the most accurately. All that and more to help you through Election Day. Plenty to learn and some games to play at itsafreecountry.org. And also don't forget, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, we'll be doing election returns coverage. I'll be anchoring. We'll have the WNYC news team, and we'll be partnering with other news organizations around the region and around the country to bring you full election results tomorrow. And we will have a live online chat for the whole evening on It's a Free Country, so you can hang out with other listeners and, you know, kibitz me and comment on the election returns that are coming in. A live online chat beginning at 8 p.m. tomorrow night at itsafreecountry.org, and our on-the-air coverage beginning at 8 o'clock tomorrow night on WNYC FM and AM New York.